From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
I think the attempt by the media to determine who people should vote for and who they shouldn't vote for, to determine who the candidates are and who are not acceptable as candidates, is something that raises real questions about the nature of the media's role in our society.
ABC News pulls its reporters from the presidential campaign coverage of candidates Carol Mosley Braun, Dennis Kucinich, and Al Sharpton. We'll speak with Mosley Braun and Kucinich. We'll also speak with ABC News. There are now more than 10,000 military contractors in Iraq, more than British soldiers. Will go to Baghdad to speak with Prothap Chatterjee of Corp Watch about the role of private military companies, the U.S. occupation, and the Pentagon's report that Halliburton has overcharged the government more than $60 billion. $60 million. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A Pentagon investigation has found that a subsidiary of Halliburton overcharged the U.S. government by as much as $61 million for gasoline delivered to Iraq. Halliburton's Kellogg Brown and Root delivers fuel to Iraq under huge no-bid reconstruction contracts that have a potential value of $15.6 billion. Separately, Pentagon officials say they rejected a proposal submitted by KBR for cafeteria services that was inflated by $67 million. Vice President Dick Cheney headed up Halliburton before he took the office of the vice presidency. President Bush continued Thursday to back a Pentagon decision that bars firms from any country that did not back the invasion of Iraq to bid on reconstruction contracts, despite criticism from the international community and even some congressional Republicans. "It's very simple," Bush told reporters. "Our people risk their lives, friendly coalition folks risk their lives, and therefore the contracting is going to reflect that, and that's what the U.S. taxpayers expect," he said. The list of countries that are barred from receiving contracts include France, Germany, Russia, India, and Canada. When told, Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder said that international law must apply here, Bush responded, quote, "International law? I better call my lawyer. I don't know what you're talking about international law," unquote. The New York-based group Human Rights Watch has estimated hundreds of Iraqi civilian deaths could have been prevented if the United States had not relied on cluster bombs so heavily in civilian areas during the invasion of Iraq. The group is estimating 13,000 cluster munitions were fired. Those cluster bombs contain nearly 2 million sub-bombs. In other Iraq news, one U.S. soldier was killed and 14 injured after a suicide bomber made it inside a heavily guarded U.S. military base in Ramadi and set off a large bomb. According to the Los Angeles Times, this marked the first time a U.S. soldier was killed after an Iraqi infiltrated a U.S. base. It also marked the third suicide attack on a U.S. base this week. The New York Times is reporting U.S. military now predicting there will be a sharp increase in assassination attempts against local Iraqi political leaders who back the U.S. occupation. According to the Pentagon, there were 8 assassination attempts on Iraqi leaders during the first 3 weeks of November. 4 of the attempts were successful. And early today, the U.S. coalition headquarters in Baghdad came under mortar attack for the first time in over a month. There were no reported injuries. in the Iraqi city of Hilla. The U.S.-appointed governor has quit after 3 days of protests against the occupation and his appointment. After the governor resigned, the U.S. appointed an acting governor. This led to even greater protests. The Washington Post reports more than 1,000 people took to the streets Thursday in the Shiite Muslim city chanting, "Yes, yes for elections, no, no to appointment." One local leader said, quote, "It's been peaceful in Hilla until now, but if the coalition forces keep refusing what the people want, it will become a big problem that they will not be able to control. Everyone will oppose the Americans." The protest comes weeks after Iraq's most influential leader, Grand Ayatollah Ali Sistani, called for the provisional government to be elected, not appointed, by the United States. A Time magazine reporter suffered severe shrapnel wounds and lost his hand after a grenade was tossed into a Humvee that was also carrying a Time photographer and two U.S. soldiers. The reporter, Michael Weitzkoff, reportedly picked up the grenade and tossed it out of the vehicle. According to a report from Time, the grenade would have likely killed everyone in the Humvee if Weitzkoff hadn't thrown it out. Also injured in the attack was well-known war photographer James Nachtwe, who was the subject of a 2001 Oscar-nominated documentary called War Photographer. In campaign news, prominent African-American Congressman Charles Rangel of New York endorsed General Wesley Clark for president. Rangel made his announcement in Harlem in what the New York Daily News described as part of a, quote, uptown turf war. It was also in Harlem where former Vice President Al Gore officially endorsed Howard Dean on Tuesday. The head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Mohamed El-Bardeh, has called on Israel to disarm itself of nuclear weapons as part of the Middle East peace plan. In an interview with the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, El-Bardeh urged Israel to follow the lead of South Africa, which in 1989 became the only country to get rid of its nuclear program. El-Bardeh also urged Israel to sign the Non-Proliferation Treaty. Although it's widely known Israel has nuclear weapons, the country has never acknowledged this formally. El-Bardeh warned that Israel's current stance is only encouraging a Middle East arms race. He said, quote, "My fear is that there will be continued incentive for the region's countries to develop weapons of mass destruction to match the Israeli arsenal." In Haiti, thousands of students took to the streets Thursday demanding the resignation of President Jean-Bertrand Aristide. Police fired tear gas and warning shots. One bystander was shot dead in Port-au-Prince. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution said the demonstrations marked the largest anti-government protests in years. In Massachusetts, the state-run Turnpike Authority has announced plans to file a $150 million lawsuit against two engineering companies, including Bechtel, that are managing the massive $15 billion highway project in Boston known as the Big Dig. The state is alleging that both Bechtel and Parsons Brinckerhoff concealed the actual cost of the project in order to increase profits. And at a conference on climate change in Milan, three UN organizations issued a report Thursday estimating that 150,000 people die needlessly each year as a direct result of global warming. The UN determined that climate change has already led to a wide-scale increase in malnutrition, diarrhea, and malaria.
Garden salad diplomacy. That means it's good for you, 'cause it's good for me. If a regime sprouts up that we don't care it for, we'll spinach it off with our CI avocado. And if any dissident still romaine, let us say, let them eat cocaine. And if that doesn't work, we can always squash 'em, just like we did in El Salvador.
Yeah. Michelle Schacht, live in our Firehouse studio. You are listening to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez.
And good day to all of our listeners and viewers around the country.
Well, Juan, you've been looking at a number of interesting stories as well, have a report out as president of National Association of Hispanic Journalists that we're going to talk about later in the program. Maybe a quick preview.
Yes, it's the eighth annual Brownout Report that the National Association of Hispanic Journalists puts out every year, analyzing how the major network news programs, evening news programs, ABC, CBS, NBC, and CNN, cover the 38 million Latinos in the United States. And we just issued it yesterday, actually. And it showed basically that about 16,000 stories that appeared in the evening news of those four networks in 2002. Only 120, which is less than 1%, had anything to do with Latinos in one way or another, and that the overwhelming number of those that did appear were about crime and terrorism and illegal immigration.
Hmm. Well, we're going to go into that later with ABC News to get their response to your report. We're also going to hear from Dennis Kucinich and Ambassador Carol Moseley Braun about the ABC pulling their reporters from their campaigns. But first, we're going to take a look at the 10,000 military contractors in Iraq. A Pentagon investigation has found evidence that a subsidiary of Halliburton company charged the U.S. government by as much as $61 million for gasoline delivered to Iraq. Halliburton subsidiary Kellogg Brown and Root delivers fuel to Iraq under huge no-bid reconstruction contracts that have a potential value of $15.6 billion. Separately, Pentagon officials said they rejected a proposal submitted by KBR for cafeteria services that was inflated by $67 million.
The allegations of overcharging are not the first against the company, which has billed the Army for questionable expenses in the past. Halliburton did not appear to have profited from the overcharging, but had instead paid a subcontractor too much for the gasoline in the first place. The company denied overcharging and called the inquiry a, quote, routine audit. Halliburton's former CEO, of course, is Vice President Dick Cheney. He still receives about $150,000 in annual deferred payments from the company. Representative Henry Waxman, a California Democrat who has been a leading congressional critic of the contract, said, quote, Halliburton has been gouging taxpayers in the White House, has been letting them get away with it. Separately, the weekly newsletter Inside the Pentagon is reporting that Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz has placed highly restrictive rules on a newly formed Inspector General's office at the Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq. The office was created to watch out for all manner of waste, fraud, abuse, price gouging by the Coalition Provisional Authority.
The Halliburton audit came as President Bush worked to justify his decision to bar non-coalition countries from competing for primary reconstruction contracts in Iraq. In perhaps the most direct connection he's made between business and war, the president said, quote, it's very simple. Our people risk their lives. Coalition-friendly coalition folks risk their lives. And therefore, the contracting is going to reflect that. The president added he might issue exemptions for those countries that write off Iraq's debt. This comes as former Secretary of State James Baker set to leave on Monday on a five-day trip to negotiate with other countries to forgive Iraq's debt. Prothap Chatterjee is on the line with us right now from Baghdad. He is managing director of CorpWatch.org. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Amy, thank you. I'm actually in Basra, not too far from the Kuwait border, but I was in Baghdad yesterday, and somebody actually sneaked me into the Al Rashid Hotel, where I visited the Kellogg Brown and Root cafeteria, which had been shut down, and I met with some of the workers there. And it's interesting, that particular cafeteria, the Al Zahir restaurant, employs about 60 South Asians, mostly Pakistanis, but also Bangladeshis and Indians, and pays them $3 a day. So it's quite astonishing that the company says that it's costing them so much money when, in fact, the workers are getting none of that money at all. And tomorrow, in fact, I'll be visiting the oil fields that Halliburton is now running. When you look at the people here are queuing up for gasoline, sometimes for a day, line stretches half a mile or more than that, a mile, gasoline, while Halliburton is trucking in gasoline from Kuwait. SOMO, which is the State Oil and Marketing Organization, which promotes the export and import of oil, they bring in gasoline here to sell to those Iraqis in those lines at 98 cents a gallon, whereas Halliburton has been charging as much as $2.50 approximately on an average for gasoline, and in some cases as much as $3.09. You mentioned that the report says that Halliburton hasn't profited out of it, but I would like to point out that at the end of the year, once the final bill is paid, Halliburton can then ask for a profit of up to 9% from the government. If the government determines that Halliburton has done a good job, then they pay them. I mean, the cost of the gasoline will, you know, in those cases, go up to as much as $3.30 a gasoline of a gallon. So they still stand to profit out of it unless Congress, the GAO, or somebody reins them in. And the gasoline is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, other than providing catering services, they provide, they set up the tents. They do, they ferry the prisons, all the Ba'athist prisoners here that are held, some 15,000 of them, basically transported back and forth by Kellogg Brown and Root, which is a subsidiary of Halliburton. And one of the reasons they're spending so much money is because, I mean, they're partly, several of their employees have been killed, and they're mortally terrified. So they hire very expensive security guards to protect them. And depending on where you are, if you're an Iraqi security guard, you get as little as $100 a month, whereas if you're an American engineer, you get as much as $1,000 a day to work for the company. So I went to the Sheraton the other day where something like 10 floors of that hotel is taken up by Halliburton employees. And if you try to go to any of the floors, your way is blocked by a private mercenary, a guard hired through a group called Armor Group, also the company that protects, you know, a number of the sort of military facilities out there. The people they hire to do this are Gurkhas, people from Nepal, former members of the British Army, and they pay them $1,300 a month. And so you cannot enter these places because Halliburton, you know, is, you know, terrified of the reaction of ordinary Iraqi citizens, because especially there is electricity 10 hours a day, there is no telephone, water is difficult to obtain, the sewage system doesn't work. And so while people are being paid $1,200 a day to work for Halliburton.
Perthap, I'd just like to ask you, in terms of these subcontractors and the employees of the subcontractors, clearly you mentioned that they're South Asians and that there are others who are being who are employees. But are you able to tell what percent or what portion of these employees that are working of these approximately 10,000 private contractors are American, and also what the subcontracting companies that supposedly Halliburton gave all of this windfall money to, where are those companies from?
It's a whole variety. So, for example, the company that hires the South Asians is actually a company called Tamimi, which is based in Saudi Arabia, and they subcontract a lot of South Asian labor that's already in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, but in some circumstances bring people over from the subcontinent. Where I'm in Basra right now, a lot of the local Iraqi labor is subcontracted through a company set up by an American who's come here and basically runs a little operation out of here. So the big money goes to the very wealthy American managers who travel around in GMC Suburbans with military escorts up and down the country. But, for example, in the main convention center, the Green Zone, the Republican Palace, a lot of the workers there are Iraqi. It's really hard to get an estimate of the total 1,800 employees, I think, that are working for Halliburton, how many are Iraqi. But I believe I mean, quite a large percentage would be Iraqi and be paid very low wages.
We're talking to Prothap Chatterjee, who is in Basra right now. I'm looking at a piece that came out of The Guardian. Says private corporations have penetrated Western warfare so deeply that they're now the second biggest contributor to coalition forces in Iraq after the Pentagon, while the official coalition figures list the British as the second largest contingent with around 9,900 troops. They're narrowly outnumbered by the 10,000 private military contractors now on the ground. We only have a minute, Prothap, but you've been looking at some of these military contractors. What's their role in Iraq? 10,000 of them.
Well, they really kind of, this is middle management. They kind of run the military in the country. And this is the problem. I mean, the news we call this an $87 billion mess. And it really is this because the money that's being spent over here, which could benefit the local community, is actually going to benefit, you know, fat cats back in Houston or in Washington, D.C. And the tragedy is that America, if it wants to take over this country, will lose that battle simply because of the sheer greed of people like Dick Cheney and companies like Halliburton.
The Guardian investigation said the proportion of contracted security personnel in the firing line is 10 times greater than during the first Gulf War. 91 for every private contractor. There were about 100 servicemen and women. Now there are 10.
Absolutely correct. And a lot of people that are, there's probably two dozen security companies out here. They're companies like Global Risk. They're companies like Erinis. Erinis, for example, is a company that's contracted to guard the oil fields. And the company, Erinis, is relatively new. It's set up by a South African businessman. But these are the same people that ran and trained the Colombian police that guard BP's pipelines in Latin America, which have been guilty of human rights abuses. So what they're basically going out and doing is recruiting people, some of them directly from the old Iraqi army, some from as far away as Nepal and Fiji, and then giving them six-week training courses, putting them in the front lines and protecting, you know, the American soldiers that are behind that.
Well, Prothap Chatterjee, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Prothap Chatterjee of CorpWatch.org. He right now is in Basra. He is traveling through Iraq. You are listening to Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute.
Long before the Cold War has become an old war, we'll send troops to fight once more for liberty against dictators financed by unholy alliance. Once they were clients of liberty. Panama invasion, the Colombian invasion, the Honduran invasion, the Guatemalan invasion, the Nicaraguan invasion, the Grenadan invasion, the Cambodian invasion, the Afghanistan invasion. What was the occasion? Liberty.
Michelle Schacht here in our Firehouse studio. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Juan, there's an interesting piece on the web at talkingpointsmemo.com. It says, what a surprise. When Congress voted the $87 billion for military expenditures and reconstruction in Iraq, they were keen to create an Office of Inspector General at the Coalition Provisional Authority to watch out for all manner of waste, fraud, abuse, price gouging, and other shenanigans. Now, it seems Paul Wolfowitz has gutted that provision. According to Inside the Pentagon, a weekly newsletter, quote, Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz last week directed a newly formed Inspector General's office in Iraq not to request sensitive information about coalition provisional authority activities related to intelligence or operational plans. The report goes on to quote Wolfowitz's order. In his statement upon approving the act, the president directed that in exercising these authorities and responsibilities, the IGCPA, that's the Coalition Provisional Authority, shall refrain from initiating, carrying out, or completing an audit or investigation, or from issuing a subpoena which requires access to sensitive operation plans, intelligence matters, counterintelligence matters, ongoing criminal investigations by other administration units of the Defense Department related to national security, or other matters the disclosure of which would constitute a serious threat to national security. That was the quote. The memo goes on to say, in plain English, or this is the piece about it, that sounds a lot like the IG, the Inspector General, should refrain from doing anything. On the surface, you can see why you wouldn't want green eyeshade types rustling through sensitive intelligence and warfighting and information willy-nilly, but common sense also tells you that all the other IGs at the Pentagon must have to work with classified information all the time, so certainly they've worked out some way of dealing with these issues.
Yep, sounds like that covers just about everything that could be done over there in Iraq. So much
for auditing.
So much for IGs. The Bush administration has been very good at that, at eliminating the powers of IGs and various other agencies as well.
Well, today we're going to talk about the media, looking at an Associated Press piece that has just come out. ABC News says it'll stop having producers travel full-time with the presidential campaigns of Carol Moseley Braun, Dennis Kucinich, and Al Sharpton. The network says it's a routine coverage decision, but it's angered Braun and Kucinich, particularly after the Ohio congressman had a testy exchange with ABC News' Ted Koppel during Tuesday's debate in New Hampshire. We will go now to that clip, which we played during the debate, the clip of Ted Koppel. If you remember this one, this moment, the clip of Ted Koppel asking the question of Carol Moseley Braun, Al Sharpton, and Dennis Kucinich about the significance of their campaign since they didn't have very much money.
Well, basically asking them to drop out is what he did. Why don't you drop out of the race is pretty much what he said.
Let's go to that moment.
This is a question to Ambassador Braun, Reverend Sharpton, Congressman Kucinich. You don't have any money, or at least not much. Reverend Sharpton has almost none. You don't have very much, Ambassador Braun.
We've raised $4.5 million. I mean, that's not nothing.
You got about $750,000 in the bank right now, and that's close to nothing when you're coming up against this kind of opposition. But let me finish the question. The question is, will there come a point when polls, money, and then ultimately the actual votes that will take place here in places like New Hampshire, the caucuses, and Iowa, will there come a point when we can expect one or more of the three of you to drop out, or are you in this as sort of a vanity candidacy? Reverend Sharpton, you go first.
Well, first of all, I think the fact that I'm doing so well in many states in the polls and ahead in national polls of people with far more money shows that I know how to deal with the national deficit probably better than anybody on this stage. So I think that in all seriousness, Ted, the problem is that we are reducing politics to people with money. I think that Americans want people with ideas. The suggestion is that if you can't buy your way now, that you can't seek the highest office in the land, that is to really sell the White House. I think that people with no money that can generate the kind of support I'm generating, that can galvanize a lot of young people, a lot of people that left this party and voted for Ralph Nader. This is what wins elections. I refuse to allow us to continue to act like the person with the best dollar or the biggest dollar has the best message. If money's going to win this, Bush is going to win. Nobody up here is going to raise the money Bush raises. What we must do is raise the votes he can't get, and you can't buy those votes.
We're talking about two things. We're talking about money, and we're talking about ultimately standing in the polls. There are only a couple of ways that you can measure how someone is doing at this stage in the election process: money and polls. You're not doing terribly well with money. You're doing even worse in the polls.
Well,
when do you pull out?
When I take the oath of office, when you're there to cover it. And I can tell you, Ted, you know, we started at the beginning of this evening talking about an endorsement. Well, I want the American people to see where the media takes politics in this country. You start with endorsement. We start talking about endorsements. Now we're talking about polls, and then we're talking about money. Well, you know, when you do that, you don't have to talk about what's important to the American people. Ted, I'm the only one up here on a stage that actually voted against the Patriot Act and voted against the war. The only one on the stage. I'm also one of the few candidates up here who's talking about taking our health care system from this for-profit system to a not-for-profit, single-payer, universal health care for all. I'm also the only one who has talked about getting out of NAFTA and the WTO and going back to bilateral trade conditioned on workers' rights, human rights, and the environment. Now, I may be inconvenient for some of those in the media, but, you know, I'm sorry about that.
And that was Congressman Dennis Kucinich following Reverend Al Sharpton. The response Kucinich got was the biggest response brought down the House of the entire evening. The day afterwards, on Wednesday, the reporter embedded in Kucinich's campaign was polled, and as well the reporter that was covering Carol Moseley Braun and Al Sharpton. We got responses from Ambassador Carol Moseley Braun, but first, last night, I reached Dennis Kucinich. This is what he had to say.
I've always had a great deal of respect for ABC News, but I think that the coincidence of the challenge that I made to Mr. Koppel and the action by ABC News in taking someone out of the campaign is noteworthy, and it certainly requires further explanation to the public. I think the attempt by the media to determine who people should vote for and who they shouldn't vote for, to determine who the candidates are and who are not acceptable as candidates, is something that raises real questions about the nature of the media's role in our society and about what right they have to be able to engage in a process of pre-selection. And when you understand the corporate nature of the media, it further troubles one who's concerned about the nature of democracy itself. So I'll tell you, Amy, I apparently struck a nerve when I spoke about the and expressed concerns about the role of the media in trying to direct the political process and the election in a certain way, because I've been hearing for the last 2 days from people all over the United States, and the response in New Hampshire has been notable, because the 2 days that I've spent campaigning since then, I would just walk into a room, you know, before I may not even be noticed, and suddenly people are applauding, and I think that it's because they recognize that I was willing to stand up and speak out and talk and ask, you know, openly ask, look, why don't we talk about things that really concern the people of this country, not about polls and endorsements and who's raised how much money.
Do you think that Ted Koppel was retaliating against your response to his question? I mean, your response got the loudest applause of the entire night when you said you guess you're inconvenient to the media.
Well, I hope not, because I admire Ted Koppel. I believe he's one of the great American journalists. But I also think that the media has a blind spot about the role that they have in a democratic society. It's not their position to create the news. It's not their position to try to determine who the candidate should be before an election. It's really their job to report the news. And I think that Nightline always has done well in reporting things and interpreting them with people who are representing diverse viewpoints. Matter of fact, their success has been in assuring diversity of viewpoints. And yet it's very interesting that that Nightline or the representative, Mr. Koppel, would seek to squelch the individual and individuals, because not just myself, it's about Reverend Sharpton, about Ambassador Mosley Braun, and try to stop the truly alternative viewpoints from coming into the debate. And in a way, it's not even about us. It's a much larger question. The real question here is who rules? Is it an unelected media handing to the people, the candidates of the media's choice, or do the people actually have the opportunity to make their choices at the ballot box without the kind of overt and even heavy-handed approach that the media might use? And you know, this strikes at the heart of not only a democracy, but when you think of the many serious matters that are confronting this country, there's so much more the media could do to elevate public discourse and to create conditions where we feel there's a free exchange of ideas. And so this perhaps can start a whole new discussion in the political debate. And if it does that, then it's served a very positive purpose.
Congressman Kucinich, what did the reporter who is embedded in your campaign tell you? Were there plans before the debate for her to stay with you, and what happened after?
The information that was provided to our campaign was that she was going to be continuing with the campaign, and as she had been for months. So suddenly they made a decision after the debate that she wouldn't be traveling with us anymore, although they've said that she may provide some kind of coverage in the future. But it's very clear that ABC made a rather untimely decision to remove coverage from a campaign that, by all accounts, on the night of the debate, suddenly broke into public awareness in a way that was somewhat dramatic. So it's more than passing strange that ABC chose to cashier their embedded reporter. And as I said, you know, it didn't affect only my campaign. They decided to, for good measure, to affect the campaigns of Reverend Sharpton and Ambassador Mosley Braun. But when you think about the implications of this, it's very disturbing, because the people of this country are really entitled to the broadest debate. Reverend Sharpton and I were the only ones who were calling for the United States to get out of Iraq. I'm alone among candidates and actually offering a plan to do so, which, again, I want to stress is on my website for people who want to go over all the details. That's at Kucinich.us. And since we're offering these alternative viewpoints, and together with Ambassador Mosley Braun, we're all advocating, the three of us advocate a universal single-payer health care, what purpose does it serve to try to limit our participation? Because what it does is actually it's actually a way of trying to smother debate. And when you consider the very corporate nature of the media, it does raise questions as to whether or not the role of the media in a democratic society is being fulfilled to its highest purpose, and whether, in fact, the requirement of the Federal Communications Act of 1934 that the media serve in the public interest, convenience, and necessity is actually being fulfilled.
We spoke to Jeffrey Schneider, our producer, Sharif Abdelkaddous, who's the ABC News vice president. He said you have two things going for you, a level of integrity and truthfulness, and that throwing meat to the dogs in this way, he said it's outrageous, and that they had made this decision before the New Hampshire campaign. And he said they will continue to cover your campaigns. AP says that they'll do it by phone, but he said they will do it as extensively, although they did pull the reporters from your campaign.
Well, let me say that they could always change their mind, and, you know, certainly they'd be welcome to return to cover the campaign. But to say that they made the decision before the debate If they watched the debate, it would follow that since there was such broad public interest in what I had to say at the debate, it would only follow and make sense that they continue the coverage. So apparently something happened at the debate that was not particularly pleasing to their approach. And I'm grateful to have them acknowledge that the level of impact that I achieved the night of the debate was sufficient that they felt that they had to withdraw the coverage of their reporter.
Congressman Kucinich, the ABC News spokesman Jeffrey Schneider said that it was a mundane decision that was made to bring some producers back to New York so they could concentrate on the upcoming New Hampshire and primary and Iowa caucus. He also said that ABC News has covered your campaign more than any other network, in fact, more than all of them combined.
Well, I don't know that they have. I mean, I can't tell you that because I don't spend that much time watching TV. I'm really trying to be busy making the news as opposed to being a spectator. But so I can't challenge that. But I will say that I'm not aware that to be so. But let's for the moment take that to be true. What would justify stopping the coverage of a campaign when the candidate, in this case me, made what has been generally agreed upon as the most powerful impression at a presidential debate? Why would the coverage cease after that moment? You would think that people would want to cover the campaign after that moment. So this shows you if this is indicative of the executive level decision-making at ABC, it may be that that what has been one of the most exalted news operations might be headed for trouble.
Congressmember Dennis Kucinich responding to ABC, pulling their embedded reporter from his campaign. When we come back from our break, we'll hear from Ambassador Carol Moseley Braun and ABC News' Vice President Jeffrey Schneider. Stay with us.
I remember I was 17 when I first met young Will. On his father's grand piano, we played good old Hearts and Soul. And I only knew the left-hand part, but he knew the right so well. He's the only boy I slept with and the only one I will. And first we had a baby girl, then it was 2 good years. And then came the one I noticed, and we parted without tears. And it's 9 months from the last goodbye, and a second babe appears. It's 10 months and a telegram, confirming all our fears. Now it's every month I get a check from some army bureaucrat. It's every month I tear it up, and I mail the damn thing back. Did you think that would make it all right? Did you think I would fall for that? You can keep your bloody money. It won't bring my Billy back. Now my name is Penny Evans. I've just turned 21. A young widow in the war that's been fought in Vietnam. I have 2 infant daughters. I thank God I have no sons. For they say the war is over, but I think it's just begun.
Michelle Schacht here with us at our Firehouse studio. She's performing tonight in New York for you lucky ones if you're at Joe's Pub this evening on our same street, Lafayette Street. You are listening to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez as we continue on the story that ABC News says it'll stop having producers travel full-time with the presidential campaigns of Dennis Kucinich, Al Sharpton, and Carol Moseley Braun. Yesterday, we reached Ambassador Moseley Braun at the airport in New Hampshire and asked her response.
I think ABC has clearly voted in favor of the best democracy that money can buy. The fact of the matter is that, or the best government that money can buy. This decision relates solely to money, as far as I can tell, because it clearly is not just a matter of standing in the polls, for example. Because certainly all three of us are doing better poll-wise than some of the candidates who they did not pull their reporters from. And frankly, I think it's such a perversion of the process, because for this the corporate leadership of this station to make a decision to marginalize the only woman, the only minorities, and the only voice of the left in this race is essentially to attempt to foreclose voters' decision-making. I mean, until such time as citizens are given an opportunity to vote, I think that it is, again, perverse for ABC to try to narrow their options like this.
Was there a full-time reporter on your campaign?
Yes. Yes, and she didn't know she was being pulled either.
And could you tell us exactly what happened, how you learned of this?
I just learned of it when I was asked by a reporter up here in New Hampshire. It was an absolute surprise to me.
How long has that reporter been with you, and what is her name?
Essentially since the beginning of the campaign. Monica is her first name. Her last name just changed because she just got married a month ago. So I don't know how she's, and I don't think she's still working under a maiden name.
Uh-huh. And so she's not with you today?
That's correct.
Is this the first day?
Yes.
What was your response, now in hindsight, but also at the time, for viewers who didn't get a chance to see the Democratic debate, to Ted Koppel's question to you, Reverend Sharpton, and Congressmember Kucinich saying, asking about your candidacies, whether you're really serious about
well,
this?
Well, you see, that's why I think it's about money. Because, quite frankly, and I'll just use the name, John Edwards is not polling as well as I am, or Al Sharpton, or Dennis Kucinich, depending on which polls you look at in what part of the country. I mean, he's below all of us, and yet and still his name, is never mentioned. And I just think that ABC made a decision against, giving voice to women, giving voice to minorities, and giving voice to someone who represents the left in this race. I really think it's ideological and not personal and has to do with money.
What about the other networks? How are they covering you? NBC, CBS, CNN, Fox?
Well, as far as I know, the other embed that we have has not been full. And while they have all marginalized our campaigns to one extent or another, at the same time, I think that this is the most egregious example of the kind of corporate decision-making that, frankly, wants to give the voters George Bush and more of the same. Strike that. I don't want to say that because not the other Democratic candidates are not more of the same. But it's just it really is a function of their attempting to again narrow the voters' options based on how much fundraising has taken place.
Ambassador Carol Mosley Braun, you mentioned at the beginning, you said that they're taking the reporters off of the three of your campaigns, Sharpton, Kucinich, as well as your own, but not off of other candidates who are, what did you say?
Who are not doing as well in the polls as we are.
Uh-huh. Like who?
Well, I mentioned to you, I mean, specifically, John Edwards has not polled as well. In some places, Dick Gephardt does not poll as well, and yet they have not pulled from, and those campaigns are considered, I guess, to be, I don't know how they see this, but it certainly doesn't have anything to do with any the voters' interest and what has really been expressed by voters as their concern.
Have you made any official response to the pulling of the ABC reporter? Are you making any official demand?
Yes. I have made an official response. I guess it's, I don't know if it's out yet. We just got off the phone. I just found out not an hour ago. I mean, I found out on my way in the middle of my last engagement. And so I immediately fired off a response to my press secretary, and she's getting it out.
And what is that demand?
Well, I have not made a specific demand of the ABC. What my demand, or what I've said, is I just hope the voters will reject and resist this attempt to define our democracy in terms of he who has the gold makes the rules.
Ambassador Carol Moseley Braun, Democratic presidential candidate, speaking to us in New Hampshire about the ABC decision to pull the producer covering her campaign directly. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez. I reached Carol Moseley Braun yesterday. Jeffrey Schneider now joins us on the phone, vice president and spokesperson for ABC News. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Good morning, Amy. Good morning, Juan.
Good morning, Jeff. And you've heard the rather lengthy comments of both Congressman Kucinich and Ambassador Moseley Braun, and your response.
I did. Well, I think that the charges, allegations they're making are pretty unfair to us. No news organization has covered this election, these campaigns, more vigorously than ABC News. We are the only news organization to have full-time producers assigned to all of the candidates. We continue to have full-time producers assigned to all of the candidates. The idea that somehow these producers have been, quote, pulled is simply false, okay? That they won't be traveling on the road day in and day out with the candidates is true, but they will be covering these campaigns, as I'm sure, Juan, you know the Daily News is probably covering these campaigns, you know, from New York, on the phone, covering the major issues, and when there's news, they'll be back out on the road with these candidates to cover those events. But we have in no way backed off of our coverage. The candidates know that, their press secretaries know that, and yet everybody keeps voicing, that particular allegation. It's pretty unfair, and it's kind of unfortunate.
But what about when the Ambassador Moseley Braun says that, for instance, that in many polls she's doing better than John Edwards? Have you reduced the coverage of John Edwards similarly?
Look, we're assessing our coverage options day to day, and we'll make decisions as a news organization that fit our needs, as I'm sure the news organization that you work for, Juan, does, and I'm sure as Democracy Now! Does. I'm sure Democracy Now!, for example, does not have reporters covering all of these campaigns as we do. In fact, I don't think there's any other news organization that has the level of coverage that we do. So it really is one of the most unfair raps I can imagine. We have been on those campaigns day in and day out. Our producers now have better and closer relations and contacts with all of those campaigns, giving us, frankly, I think, a leg up on our competition in covering those campaigns, and we will continue to cover them.
But, Jeff, granted, ABC probably had more producers out there on the road with all of these other candidates than anyone else, but you do have to admit that the day after the debate, where clearly Ted Koppel seemed a little bit embarrassed after basically asking these three, you know, when are you going to throw it in, that suddenly that they learn, or they're all claiming, I don't know if they're all deciding to put out the same story together, but I doubt that, but they're all claiming that suddenly the folks assigned to them were told that they're no longer going to be on a daily basis.
Juan, as you know, simply because B follows A, it doesn't mean that A caused B, okay? I can tell you that I am certain that the decision was made by our news desk in the days leading up to the New Hampshire debate. It was actually communicated to those producers that we needed them to come back to New York and to continue to cover those campaigns. But the idea that a journalist with the integrity of Ted Koppel, that we would in some way retaliate, is simply, it's beneath contempt. It's just an outrageous charge, and it's just not true.
After he asked each of them, singling them out, is this a sort of vanity candidacy? And then Dennis Kucinich's response brought down the house and was a bit embarrassing to Ted Koppel.
Amy, I can assure you that Ted Koppel is a very big boy and that he is hardly embarrassed by anybody's response.
Let me just finish for one second, and I
would say that coming from two people who are in the business of asking questions, I don't think there's anything wrong with asking questions. That's our job in the media, is to pose questions and to try and elicit answers. I'm not gonna Monday morning quarterback the questions that Ted Koppel asked during the debate. I think that, you know, it is his prerogative as a journalist to ask the questions that he thinks are important and the ones that he wants to hear answers to.
Have producers been pulled from the other campaigns?
No producers, just to be fair to us, I think you have to stop saying that producers have been pulled. No producers have been pulled from any campaigns. What has happened is, instead of traveling day to day around the country, by the way, at extremely high expense with these candidates, we are reallocating some of our resources so that we can continue to cover the New Hampshire and Iowa caucuses in a way that we need to. No producer has been pulled off of any campaign. Our producers are still covering the campaigns, and frankly, our producers are covering them in the way that every other news organization in America has been covering these campaigns, which is not on the road, but, you know, from their main offices and things like that. I think that it is grossly unfair to keep saying that we, quote, pulled our producers. It is simply untrue.
Well, just a final note on Kucinich's campaign. They said that the reporter or producer had just gone through the whole schedule of the Kucinich campaign and was herself surprised on Wednesday.
That may be true. And as I told you, I know that the decision was made back here prior to the New Hampshire campaign, and it was made clear to her on the day after. You know, if in a perfect world, if I could go back and, you know, look at how, you know, this would roll out, obviously the timing was bad. But just because, you know, B followed A, it does not mean that one caused the other. And it is grossly unfair and, frankly, quite outrageous, I think, to make that kind of a charge.
Well, Jeffrey Schneider, while we have you on the line, sure. As Vice President of ABC News, Juan, your organization that you're president of, the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, just came out with their annual Brownout Report. Can you talk about it?
Well, yes, and Jeffrey's very familiar with it because we've actually talked personally about it in the past. But our new Brownout Report just came out, and it showed that we still have a continuing problem in terms of the NAHJ researchers, as they've done a look at the 16,000 news stories put out by the evening broadcasts of ABC, CBS, NBC, and CNN in 2002, and showing that during that time, out of the 16,000 stories, only 120 or less than 1% were directly focused on either Latinos or Latino individuals in the country. Less than 1%. It's a slight increase over the previous year, but still rather dismal as far as the NAHJ is concerned in terms of the kind of coverage that the Latino community should be receiving. And I know we've had discussions about this in the past. Jeff, you've had a chance to look at the report, and admittedly, I will be the first to say that ABC, within that overall dismal showing, ABC definitely was ahead of the other networks in a variety of areas, including more balanced stories of the few that were aired, and also more interviewing actually of Latinos and dealing with Latino subject matter. But your response to the report and how the ABC sees its continuing coverage of the Latino community.
Sure. Juan, you know, you're right. We have spoken about this extensively through the years. You know, I think it's an important report. It points out something that we know, that diversity is extremely important in front of the camera, behind the camera, and in the stories that we put on the air. Obviously, I think every news organization feels that it can do a lot better, and we want to do better. I was heartened to see that ABC News, you know, was singled out for a considerable amount of praise, I thought, in that report. We have certainly made substantial efforts to be more diverse and more inclusive. A few years ago, we realized that we were often putting on the same experts time and again to talk on any number of subjects, and that they did not reflect our audience. And we made a year-long effort to put together a diversity database with thousands of names of experts from every ethnic background and socioeconomic background, so that we would have the ability to go to differing voices. And I think that you see the results of that in this study. I think you see that we have actually made improvement in that area.
Juan, okay. We have to wrap up.
Yeah, we're going to have to wrap it up, Jeff. But thank you very much for the comment, and thank you for coming on and giving us your viewpoints.
Thanks, Amy.
Thank you. Jeffrey Schneider, Vice President of ABC News. And that does it for the show. If you want to get a copy, call 1-800-881-2359. Our website is democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdulkaddous, Anna Noguera, Elizabeth Press, Jeremy Scahill, Purvesh Sharma, Orlando Richard, and John Randolph, our filmmakers, also Rich Kim here. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez as we are taken out by Michelle Schacht.